You are listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire, episode 103 for the week of April 14th, 2013. Welcome back, everybody. As usual, this is Amin.
And this is Kyle.
And this is going to be a special spoiler-free episode, actually, as I talk about my experiences at the Days of Ice and Fire 2013 held by Fantasy Flight Games in Roseville, Minnesota. So I'm going to tell you about my time at the Days of Ice and Fire, Kyle.
All right, please do. Please use that accent more, Minnesota.
Yeah. This is actually, Days of Ice and Fire is a yearly event that's held by Fantasy Flight Games. You remember when we had Jason on
to
be interviewed
a while back,
and we talked about the board game. And so what they do there is they show off all the games. They have the card game, board game, there's like some battles, strategic battle games, and they have tournaments for the various things. They have tournaments for the card game, which is big. And this year they had the first tournament for the board game, where they revealed a new four-player expansion called A Feast for Crows that adds House Arryn, which is pretty interesting. And we got to try that out and play in a tournament. I met FT Ward, who was there as well.
Cool.
What was really cool about the event is one thing, I got to meet Jason Walden in person and some of the other FFG staff.
Oh, nice.
And I actually managed to do a little short interview with him about the expansion, about 10 minutes talking about it, and that's going to be after the introduction in this podcast. Well, I'll put the interview there. I also put some discussion that I had with some of the players after the final game, where we talk about the board game and balance and strategies. That'll be there as well for people who are interested in the board game. What else happened? Let's see. Met up with a couple of listeners there beyond FD Ward. We also met Tim and Jared.
Played a whole lot of games.
Oh, I played a whole lot of games, and I narrowly missed the final, which was a little bit annoying. I was fifth. I became ranked fifth. The top four got to play in the final.
Oh, you were fifth total? Out of how many people were there?
It was 30 people playing in the tournament, yeah. And the thing is, actually, it was really my fault, and no one really knew the exact scoring system, how it worked, because I won my first game, and the second game I tied for second and got like the full points. And in the third game when I was playing, I didn't quite realize that you didn't have to win that game to get in the final. And so I was playing it, and I was ranked number three overall into that game, and we're playing. And it turns out that if I hadn't tried to win that game and had just like let it end earlier, then I would have been in the final. Mm. But I mean, it's the first tournament ever for the board game, so none of us really knew exactly how the tournament works and had that experience. Whereas like the card game is a lot more famous and there's a lot more tournaments. Everyone knows how it's done, right?
Okay.
So it was a learning experience, and it was good to learn that. And the good thing is, because of the new system of the four players and for the board game, there's going to be other tournaments for the board game. It's very conducive for having tournaments, so I'm looking forward to playing other tournaments beyond just the FFG-hosted ones.
Very cool.
So hopefully they'll do that. What's the other thing I wanted to say? Okay, the other thing that happened there, there was random draws, and I got a draw, and I won a second season Blu-ray set, which is nice, which I didn't have
first
season. So, I mean, that was great. I have both seasons.
You didn't get a Game of Thrones box? House Woody box?
No. But there was actually a trivia session, like a trivia contest.
Oh, yeah?
FT Ward and I made a team, and it was up to four people. Unfortunately, we didn't find the other listeners until afterwards. Otherwise, we would have joined. We just joined up with two random guys.
Okay.
But our team was Team Manwoody, and like two other teams tried to use it as well. I think they were listeners.
Oh, really?
There's like three teams trying to be Manwoody. It's too bad we didn't team up properly.
That's kind of
awesome. What happened is, like, so unfortunately, usually it's a written thing, but this year they just did the kind of like trivia, put your hands up first kind of thing. And we made the big mistake of not sitting near the front. So for most of the easy questions, they didn't even see us, right? They're near the front. We needed Mimi for that one, for some of the Dothraki questions. And also, if I think if we had Mimi there, she would have stuck out. But then it'd be like, oh, the nice lady there. And she put her hand up.
The nice lady with the boobs in the back.
Mimi, it would have been awesome if Mimi was there. She would have like definitely stuck out. And she would have been funny if she joined the tournament and played there. And you use that to her advantage, which is fair, right? Because I don't think there was a single girl in the entire board game tournament. They were there for the card game. Yeah, for the card game, they were there because the card game is bigger, right? It has the more variety. So that has female players there. But for the board game, it was just all guys. So, I know that there's female players in the board game. Yeah. I'm sure they'll be there at the other tournaments just because this was like not everyone could get there, right?
Okay.
What else? So anyways, the trivia, we were like stuck at zero for a while they were getting all the easy questions. And then they started asking some of the harder questions, and they would get them wrong, and we managed to jump in and get a bunch of them and get the second place. So we ended up second place, so it was good. Pretty good for House Manduty.
How hard questions? Give me an example
here. I'm trying to think of an example that's not spoiler-based, because I don't want this episode to have spoilers, because it's going to be open to the public. I'll tell you later. But there was a variety of questions. Some of them
were difficult. Did you think they were difficult?
I thought that so there was 20 questions. I thought that at least 13 or 14 were pretty easy, but okay. There were 5 of them that were tough, and then some of them only we got. So I feel that if it was a written thing, we would have had the highest score because we got some. Not that we got all the hard ones, but we got more hard ones than other ones, I think, because the ones we usually got, people weren't even answering. Right, so yeah. I think we could have got first on that one, but it doesn't matter. We I think represented well.
Right, also, Anonymity cool.
was a fun thing, and it was a good event. So it was really enjoyable, and they were even nice enough to give me a couple extra copies of the expansion to take to the Ice and Fire convention coming up, so we can try it out there with that tournament there. So awesome. I really enjoyed getting to know the people at FFG, Fantasy Flight Games. They're a really great company. They love the books. Most of the people there have read the books. They love the TV show. And the final thing is we may actually have Damon Stone. Pretty cool name. Damon Stone.
Damon Stone. That's a badass
name. Yeah, he sounds like he's from the books. It's like
Damon Blackfyre's bastard who was born in the Vale.
He's pretty badass name. And he's a cool guy. Damon Stone may be joining us in May or June to, again, like another guy from FFG, except he's like one of the card game designers.
Oh, okay.
So we'll get to learn more about the card game, but I'm just putting his name out there because maybe some of the card game people know who that is.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, and the other really cool thing is I showed off, I took the second art book, A Clash of Kings, from the MS Paint project that we did.
Okay.
And I took the copy there and I showed it to Jason and some of the other FFG guys, and they really loved it. Like, they really enjoyed it. Yeah.
So they're going to put some of the artwork on the cards. The
card game, right? We should suggest that, yeah.
like the booby trap saddle?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's all I wanted to say. And so, again, to repeat, what's coming up first is the interview with Jason Walden. What comes up after that is general discussion with the players about the board game. And the final point is, we did have a meetup at the Cannes Mongolian Barbecue, but unfortunately, almost no one showed up to that one. I don't know what happened, but it was just me and FT Ward, his wife, and Jarek. We had a good time there.
You love barbecue.
I like the barbecues.
Mongolian barbecue.
Yeah. Well, we had Korean barbecue that time in Vancouver, right? We met up there.
Vancouver style.
Yeah. Barbecue is the good stuff, so.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's all I got
to
say.
Well, very cool. I look forward to listening to these interviews and whatnot because I haven't heard them myself. So
yeah, it's going to be a short episode, which is nice. That's why I wanted to just give the intro so people know what's going on.
How long did you talk to them for?
Well, for Jason, it's 10 minutes, about 10 minutes or so. And for the game discussion, again, it's about 10 minutes each.
Okay, nice.
So, okay, good, man. Nice talking to you. And if you listen to this episode and you enjoy it, check us out at podcastoficeandfire.com, and we're on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and DeviantArt, and all of that, all things smart. So that's my new line for that.
Keeping in mind, almost all our episodes have full spoilers for all 5 published books in the Song of Ice and Fire series, so it's best if you're a book reader, because we don't always have a warning at the start of the episodes.
This is recording here. So here we're with Jason Walden. What's your exact title again, Jason?
I'm a game producer for Fantasy Flight Games.
Okay, good. Good to have you back here on the podcast.
Yeah.
This is kind of a first for a podcast, although we have somebody at WonderCon who did some interviews there as well, but kind of on-the-place sort of thing. And we have somebody here who might be commenting at points. Who's here?
It's FT Ward from the boards.
Cool. Okay, so we're going to talk about expansion for the Game of Thrones board game today that we just saw at the Days of Ice and Fire 2013, if you could tell us a little bit about it.
This is the Feast for Crows expansion. We're expanding the game in a new direction that we haven't tried before, but it's changing the victory conditions of the game a little bit. Rather than taking castles and strongholds like you would normally, you're going to be trying to accomplish victory objectives that are listed on a series of cards that you'll be having in your hand. We also introduced House Aaron in this expansion for the first time. They have a full deck of 7 house cards to play around with, and as well as a new Westeros deck, which interacts with this particular format in a unique and new way.
So were you thinking of this being specifically for 4 players, or were you thinking that this could be used for the other levels of play?
This is specifically 4 players. It was designed specifically with 4 players in mind. It was also designed to be playable under 2 hours, which is a little bit of a convergence from the base game, which took a little bit longer. And also, which is what we're introducing for the first time here at Days of Ice and Fire, is the tournament structure. Being four players and playable in under 2 hours, we're able to do the tournament for the first time ever. So we're kind of interested to see how that's going to turn out tomorrow and Sunday.
I think that's a really good idea. One, because it seems like people could have their own tournaments, like mini tournaments using this system, right?
Yep. We are publishing, and they're publishing the rule set for the tournament, and we're basically opening up for whether it's players wanting to form their own leagues or game stores wanting to form their own leagues. We're setting it up so that, anyone who wants to can pick up these tournament rules and play with this scenario in that format.
I think that's a good idea for the board game to help it, because you can see the card game so established, there's so many tournaments, but there's room for the board game to grow. And I think this is a really good way of doing it, because as you said, the original game can take a while, and it's hard to have tournaments where each game can go. And if you just stop the original game in the middle after 2 hours, that's not a good gauge of where it's going. But with this game, I think it is, because of the way it's so fluid.
Yeah.
Things are changing.
We've had great turnout so far. For a first-time tournament, we've had 30 people sign up. So it's sounding like it's going to work out pretty well.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I'll just give my initial impressions on the game. But I really like what you've done with House Aaron here, which is kind of a thematic focus on power generation, that sort of thing. I think that's... In fact, that's probably the first time that you've had one house that's been like that, that's been focused in one area. Like, how did you think of that?
They are, it was, when we're looking at House Aaron and including them for the first time, we kind of asked ourselves, like, what are their strengths and how do we want them to feel? And one thing we kept coming across was that, they just sit behind their big giant castle and mountain walls and kind of hoard their power. Mm. So we kind of wanted to include that. I mean, the game is about combat, so we didn't want to make them completely avoid combat, but they do play off of the ability to just kind of sit way back and just kind of defend themselves. For example, they actually utilize a 6-strength garrison on their home realm, the Eyrie. Yeah.
Which we didn't have the first time we played it. Halfway through, we're like, oh, wait a minute, I have 6 there?
Yeah. A 6-strength garrison is 3 times the amount that normal people would have, or normal teams will have for their garrison. It allows you to kind of sit back and play your strategy. House Aaron's main victory objective is to hoard power tokens in this game. And their cards allow them to do that with some pretty interesting ones. For example, Littlefinger.
I think Littlefinger deserved to get his own good card here, which he finally is properly represented here. So.
Yes.
In fact, the garrison was pretty important to know there, because that's the one thing that I thought, without the garrison, I felt that Aaron could use a port. I mean, this is all moddable; people can mod if they want, but because it's all or nothing with the ships, that I was looking at, right?
Not only do they not have a port, so if you're comparing their home realm to a lot of the other factions' home realm, they don't have a port, and they don't have a stronghold; they have a castle. Yeah. So they're actually behind as far as total balance, but they're increased in not only their ease, or I guess I should say relative ease of their victory objective, as well as their 6-strength garrison, which allows them to hold their home area almost indefinitely.
And I mean, I was looking at the new deck, and it doesn't seem to be as many full-out musters anyways now. It seems like you're going to have to consolidate muster or whatever, so it won't hurt as much not to have a stronghold, right? If it was just the usual... There's only one full-out mustering, right? There's all these other cards that are kind of dependent on decisions, or you could...
So to briefly summarize what we did with the Westeros deck, we took out all supplies. Supplies are no longer in the Westeros deck at all. You get supplies at the end of every round, though. So... Barrels and the territories that have the little supply barrels actually matter every single round. So taking an area with a barrel will actually make a huge difference immediately, not in some indefinite future that you can't predict. In place of the supplies, we added a whole bunch of new abilities into the Westeros deck. Mustering is still there. There are 3 mustering cards, 3 basic mustering cards, but 2 of the mustering cards only muster from castles. So it kind of reduces your total mustering strength, but it increases the potency of the castles, because those that control the castles, which are the small ones, they will have a little bit of an advantage. But there are 2 other cards that allow the holder of the Iron Throne to choose to muster from everywhere, for everyone to muster from strongholds and castles, or reduce the wildling track to 0, which is important, because the wildling tracks, the wildling icons are a lot more prevalent in this Westeros deck. There are 8 of 10 cards with wildling icons. So the wildlings are going to be advancing much faster, and it's the burden, the card is called Burden of Power. It is on the burden of the holder of the Iron Throne to choose to send men to the wall and stave off the wildlings, or to allow everyone to muster again.
Yeah. I mean, this what I noticed just for playing the first time around is there's so much diplomacy going here beyond the usual support and raid kind of diplomacy. There's so much here with these different cards, the objectives, you can switch objectives, and I think that's going to be really interesting to see how that's played out tomorrow.
Yeah, the you have a certain number of cards in your hand, which determine your objective, and it's secret information. So you don't know what I'm trying to do. You have no idea. So I may tell you, oh it's okay, I want to take this little area next to you because it's my objective, but the truth of the matter is I have a deeper, maybe more sinister objective that you don't even know about. So you can't really predict exactly when someone's going to stop what they're doing.
Yeah. And there are various points for the different objectives. They're not all the same, right? You can get if it's harder for your house to do it, it seems that you gain more, right? Is that the
correct
idea?
Each card has all four houses listed on it, and each house has a certain number of victory points they can get for completing the objective. For example, one card called A Riper Fruit is the objective says control Winterfell. Hmm. Well, Stark, he can have this card and he can score the card if he wishes, but it gives him zero victory points if he does so. So he's simply scoring it to get it out of his hand and draw another card. Yeah. On the reverse side, Baratheon, if he holds Winterfell, gets two victory points because it's a lot harder for Baratheon to reach all that way up north and take it from Stark.
Yeah, I saw that when I was using it. I was wondering why there's zeros. I'm like, okay, well, that's part of it. Like, and in fact, you might not want to play it right away. I had one where it was like control the Eyrie, which was Aaron. I held on to it till the last second because you can always get rid of it. And you don't want to get stuck with three cards that you can't use. So you don't have to get rid of it right away. Hold on to it and draw another, right? So the strategy even there.
Yep.
Okay, do you have any comments or any questions for him?
Did you consider a new map, or were you always set on using the original map?
There are some things we wanted out of this expansion. I mentioned a couple. We wanted it to be four-player. We wanted it to be tournament possible, and we wanted it to be playable in under 2 hours. Other than that, it was pretty open-ended what I could do with it. And I'm sorry, we also had to be a deck of cards. So when it comes to a map, no, it needed to be a deck of cards, and that was the model that we were basing it around. So.
Well, based on those limitations, I have to say it blew me away. I didn't think it'd be this. I mean, like, I enjoyed the Dance with Dragons variant, but I expected something of that. Like, but this is almost like another game with this limitation. But I mean, in the future, you might not have this limitation if you make it. Like, is there any other ideas for future games coming out, or we can have no comment?
At this point? No comment. The IP is pretty diverse. There's a lot out there, but I can't say whether we're going to do anything specific.
Yeah.
So.
But if this this is my hope, is that this will start something and have regional tournaments.
If this really works, if the tournament structure works, I would love to do more tournament-based games, but no promises.
No, but like, we'll see how it goes. Okay, I think that's all I have.
I was very impressed. Yeah. I mean, we just played one game, but I was very impressed with it.
Okay.
There's a lot going on still.
So thanks for joining us again, and I just wanted to ask how you found Season 3 so far. Have you been enjoying it?
I am loving it. Yeah. I really love the Marjorie character. Yeah. I think they're playing her up perfectly.
Yeah.
Even better than the books.
Yeah, actually, we've talked about that in the last episode. This is one of my favorite characters. And she's hot, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
That's a given. But
I'm loving all directions of her, I should say.
Here's my here's my prediction, actually. I was just thinking, you know that crossbow? I bet that crossbow is going to be used by somebody else later on. I bet you that. That's my prediction right here. Oh, one final question on this. So I guess when is the... this is called the Feast for Crows. That's the title. When is this kind of come out for general purchase?
I don't have a definitive date yet, but we are planning to release it for
purchase. Yeah, so people could just buy it online and ship to them and like print on demand.
Yep. Right now it is an exclusive item for those that attended the Days of Ice and Fire 2013. Yeah. You guys got it with your attendance. Otherwise, we will be releasing it as a POD product, which is a print on demand product.
Yeah.
But I can't say when.
Okay, good. So thanks a lot, Jason, and be in touch.
Yeah.
All right, what did you think of the art book? We showed you the Clash of Kings.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah. I totally loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Anyone who contributed to that, congratulations. Yeah. You guys are my favorite.
Cool. Okay, thanks a lot. I'm going to stop this here. Right? Okay. Here's our after show. I threw it at the end of the episode. Oh, okay, now we're recording again.
During the credits.
What I just said was like the feedback for the last interview was really good. And because it was one of those interviews where we just talked about everything. We talked about consolidate powers on the ocean. Like we could talk about that, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like a perfunctory or like a skin level thing. It was a deep interview. So
The
feedback was good.
There was strategy. there was humor. There was... Yeah. Tears, it was great.
Yeah. And as I said, if there's anybody else from FFG that would be interested in joining us from the different departments and just coming and chatting about like particular game and then doing like a chapter of the reread, we're open to that. So
we're all huge Game of Thrones fans in general, so I can spread the word and we'll see what we can come up with.
Okay. Okay, so we're here for the end of Days of Ice and Fire, and we're here with, what's your name?
Taylor.
And
Corey Timmons.
Yep. And we're just talking about, we got, as well as usual.
It's FT Ward from the board.
We're just talking about, like, the expansion here, Feast for Crows. Oh, we got the champion, too, if you want to join in on the chat.
And what's the champion's name? We're doing a little audio recording for this.
Sweet.
Yeah. What's your name?
Kyle.
Kyle, okay. So what were your general thoughts on the expansion?
I really enjoyed it. The objectives changed it a lot from the base game.
Hmm. I didn't have a lot of experience with the base game, so for me it was awesome. I love the objectives, and each game was completely different where the houses ended up.
So you won. Did you enjoy the expansion?
Yeah. I don't know. It could have been better. No.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was perfect. Yeah. You know, all the houses had good balance with the objectives. You didn't know exactly what people were going to do. And, it was a well thought out.
Well, even in the last game, it was pretty balanced. Everyone got to the end point. So what we're doing right now, we should have recorded earlier. We spent like half an hour just chatting about startups and things like that. We're just looking at a couple of the cards and stuff. So we looked at Land Grab here, and it's control more land areas than any of their house. And Baratheon gets 2 versus the 1 for the other one. So we were thinking that maybe it would be nice if Aaron got 2 as well, maybe, just comparatively.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, these are just little like ideas for the future. The overall deck is so varied and so creative. It's pretty good. Like there's one where you control 2 sides of a bridge. That shows somebody looked at the board game and saw like what's the facets of the board game and did that. So, do you have any comments? I think that's about all I have to say.
Lots of fun.
Yeah. What was your favorite house? Playing a favorite house in the you've read the first in the books. I first have to play. What's the both? Which one?
Yes, I'm House Stark.
Yeah.
I'd say favorite to play would be Stark or Lannister.
Favorite house in the books and favorite house to play?
Books? I'm a Stannis man.
Yeah. Oh, Stannis man.
I wish I had my team Stannis too.
Yeah.
And as far as the game, I really liked playing Lannister.
Yeah. You got a couple of wins with Lannister.
Yeah,
right?
I won 2 with Lannister and then not so much.
Well, in this game specifically, like, there was one point where you almost took King's Landing. It was just like kind of a bad luck card there, like that you didn't have. So you suckered him out of King's Landing. He went back and then he was going to punch back and he had the numbers to do it. It was just kind of lucky. So for me,
it's House Stark from the books and I won with Baratheon, so I actually like Baratheon, but I think they're a little weaker in this scenario. Yeah. They've got a tough road to hoe.
Yeah. I disagree with that, I think. I think once you get King's Landing, you're the easiest to hold. But like once you get ships out, if you set up properly, then you just keep going.
I think Baratheon needs to have a decent objective draw.
And that's true.
If they get a decent objective draw, then they've got a really good chance.
Yeah.
It depends on what Lannister does, too. If they want, they can hold it for a couple turns, at least.
Well, they need to try to do that, to hold it for a couple turns. But at some point, there's going to be a switch over.
Yeah.
And the earlier you do it, like the less competent Lannister is, the more it goes to Baratheon. If they play perfectly, they can hold it the first turn.
Ideal for Lannister is Lannister needs to win. If they can hold it for a turn or two.
Yeah.
And pop a muster. If they can
pop a muster,
if a muster pops in the first two rounds,
because there is a way to put a
sneak
a muster.
If Lannister doesn't get a muster in the first two turns, they will lose King's Landing, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But if they lose it first round or second round with no muster, they're in trouble.
They stop going up, and Baratheon starts going, and it's just like unstoppable. Yeah. You just keep going. Yeah. Once you get that, he kind of messed up losing the ships there.
Yeah.
That was a little bit unfortunate.
At the final table.
Yeah. Well, that was a good play by you. That was really good. When you went down with your ships,
that was kind of
worth it. The sea is so important in this game. Just to knock him out of the sea there.
Well, and getting him to take White Harbor was kind of actually the turning point for me, too. And I was able to get those ships, and I accurate up. I should have got that third ship.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the turning point that allowed me to even do anything. So.
And then you what you did is you knew the last turn you needed to keep the 5, so you kind of just went aggressive and grabbed a lot, right?
And I had I had a couple different options. I had one for the most strongholds.
Oh, you did?
And so that's why I actually originally thought I'd go into Dragonstone.
How much points was that?
I think that's like 1 or 2. It was just 1, but it didn't
still
matter
a free point,
I needed the 1. And so I just had to hold on to
that's a good point. Yeah.
Some of those.
There's a couple cards, you know, for your listeners. You need to make sure you read really carefully. Like, most strongholds, that's it.
Yeah.
Most castles. So, like, if you have no strongholds but you have 3 castles, you can score that card.
Well, the game has shifted a lot toward castles with the musters, right? There's only one regular mustering that just comes up.
Right.
Everything else is dependent.
That's what I liked about this scenario, too, was that it did kind of balance out the castles and the strongholds.
And there was when I was playing Stark, there's one that's like Control Winterfell. I drew Control Winterfell, which is 0 points.
Yeah.
But I didn't score it because I was going to score it. I couldn't score another secret objective. I didn't score it because I felt like there's a iron.
That's only once a game, but it might come up. And that's another reason why it's good for Baratheon, because you can just sit and keep going without scoring cards for a while.
And it hadn't come up yet, so I kept it in my hand. And as soon as it came up, I went ahead and scored it as my second objective so I could draw a card.
Yeah.
But if I had scored it early to draw a card, I would have lost a point. So it's a little stuff like that.
Sandbag a little bit.
You gotta watch for that card, and if it's out, you can do that. But if you don't, you keep it in your hand.
So Taylor, your general strategy for the last game, you tried to hold King's Landing as strong, long as possible. You tried to came back, but I was looking at your hand that you had. It was just a bad hand. It was like impossible. It was get Storm's End. Well, how the hell are you gonna get Storm's End when he's got all the ships there, right?
Yeah.
So the only thing that what we hoped for was that card that comes up and switches the thing which came, but still it didn't.
I didn't get any.
That's still a crucial card. You don't have that card that switches your thing, and you're sitting there doing nothing, right?
And that's really nice too that they did that, so somebody doesn't get just stuck with objectives.
Yeah.
And there's a few of those in the deck, right?
Like, I think there's at least two.
There's
two in that.
And there's another one where there's one that you get the new card, and there's one where you switch it around, which is really interesting.
Pass Aaron, really cool. Cool power cards. Yeah. Cool leaders. Littlefinger's awesome.
I think they kind of.
Oh yeah, the Aaron cards are awesome. Yeah,
Aaron is thematic. Is really interesting. I think that's kind of what starts. That's the first. Dynamics that you got to watch of who are they going to ally with, because if them and Stark don't go at it, then that puts a clock on the Lannister and Baratheon, whereas if they decide to go to battle, then it definitely tips the favor.
Well, the thing is, you can try to block Aaron's money, but then you can't spend any. Like, it becomes like kind of a gamble. Like, when bids come up, you're trying to block them. But then if you don't spend money on the bids, then you get screwed over in the bids.
Yeah, I think that relationship with Stark and Aaron also can be very interesting, just the politics.
My first table, I played as Aaron, I destroyed Stark. Yeah. And the reason was because on my draw, I had Castle Black, take another person's home realm. So on that on that type of draw, I'm like, well, it's
going to have to follow Stark. What you get.
I'm like, I'm going. So you never know what's going to happen, you know, based on your. And that's what's awesome that you you may have some weird ninja mentality that you want to do, and you can't lose your points. You actually sacrifice armies. You actually can go on a feint and do something, sacrifice your army because you got your point.
And I think House Aaron is the one that is going to decide how the game goes. You know, if they're going to go north, that changes the whole dynamics of the game. If they're going to
get involved down here with these two, that changes. Yeah. I do wish they had a port, I think.
A port would help, because once you lose a ship, that's it. You're never getting ships again.
It's so hard to get anywhere.
In fact, when you sent that ship down there, you were smart to consolidate one there, because you never know if a muster comes.
And I think that's why one reason why they don't is that is Stark's way of kind of balancing the scales and saying, if you do this, this is what's going to happen, or this could be my counter.
I mean, they did get to 7 points this game, so I mean, he was playing well, like, with what he had. But like, if you look at Stark's cards, they're actually kind of focused on this side, like, really helps to hold here. The only problem is then Lannister might go up if he has that card set.
Yeah,
right?
So when I was Stark, I was trying to feel out Aaron what if he was gonna attack or form an alliance, and that was I was just waiting for if he decided to attack, then taking those ships, and once you take the Narrow Sea, then it's pretty tough for.
It's that Ramsay, is it Ramsay? Oh, no, it's Roose. Roose Bolton that keeps letting you get your four back. Like, that's, it's pretty powerful. Like, somebody was complaining about that in the base game, but I think in the base game it's pretty good, because you have to lose the battle, but here you don't care if you lose all the battles. You can just keep getting that four.
Well, and that's Stark's, and that's how Stark can actually protect themselves. They got to use their cards wisely, because they don't start with any stars. They can't muster new troops.
Well, they're balanced with having the sword. Usually the guy who has a sword is low on stars to balance that.
Yeah, so you have to defend yourself with the sword and with your cards, because you don't have the units.
Cool. Well, that's all I have to say. Any final comments? So I think that's it.
Yeah.
Good. Okay,
buy the Prime Demand expansion. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Definitely worth it. Especially four-player.
Yeah. Feast for Crows,
Totally makes it four-player.
Yeah, it saves four-player, because four-player otherwise is hard to play properly. Okay, thanks, guys. Let me stop this.